Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
What can happen when a labor secretary like Marty Walsh gets involved? Ford pumping up electric vehicles, creating 11,000 jobs. And today on the show, the Southeast Labor's Council and the Virginia Labor Federation. Welcome to the Wednesday, September 29th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Mr. David Rutledge will be our first guest on the show. He comes from LIUNA Local 386 out of the growing city of Nashville, Tennessee. He's an assistant business manager of the Southeast Labor's District Council, also an organizer. Last time we had him on the show, he was talking about organizing at Vanderbilt University, legendary university. We'll touch on that today. We'll talk about the need for more workers. Nashville is a growing city, really growing, and they're trying to make sure that those jobs go union. We'll talk about that. And the bigger picture, infrastructure. And hats off to our presenting sponsor here, Terry O'Sullivan of Labor's International, LIUNA.org, the nation's leading infrastructure union. And Terry and his crew, they're doing everything to make sure we get this bipartisan infrastructure deal passed this week. I hear there might be a vote tomorrow. But here's what they're doing. Digital ads, including video, streaming audio, are airing on a variety of platforms to reach LIUNA members, Capitol Hill members, and anybody that's actually listening and watching right now. To date, the videos have been viewed by nearly 1 million times, and all ads have generated more than 5 million impressions. The most recent ad states that once in a generation, we have an opportunity to do great things. In fact, we're going to play a snippet of it right now on America's Workforce. Let's listen.
Once in a generation, we have the opportunity to do great things. To build America stronger and create a lasting legacy for future generations. That's why LIUNA members all over America are standing up. This is our moment. A chance to create hundreds of thousands of good union jobs and build a better future for all of us. The time to act is now. Tell Congress to pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill.
This is our moment. That's right. It's a chance to create hundreds of thousands of good union jobs and build a better future for all of us. I want to read a statement from Liz Schuler, president of the Labor Federation. Liz says, this is an important week. Congress has the chance to build back better. Build back better investment agenda. With both the reconciliation and infrastructure bills, we did the work to get the best legislation to meet this moment, and we are moving our workers' first agenda forward. These bills represent a down payment on the future of working families, and they are game changers. Liz goes on to say, the bills make sorely needed investments in infrastructure that will make sure our roads and bridges are safe. High-speed internet access is expanded, and we pay attention to the importance of the care economy. Care is critical infrastructure, and this is a critical investment with paid family and medical leave. It includes investments in education that will help end child poverty. It supports the return to work for those who are sidelined by their caregiving responsibilities during the pandemic. And boy, there's a lot in that category. It will also ensure that care jobs are good jobs that support families. Every family, says Liz Schuler, will benefit in some way from these investments. It's vital that Congress pass this agenda without any cuts. That's the biggie because There's a couple of key Democrats are saying that $3.5 trillion is way too much money. And then we're dealing with this debt limit that is supposedly comes to fruition on Friday, October 1st. Yeah, tomorrow's the end of the third quarter. September 30th is always the end of the fiscal year. Doris Krause-Mays, on behalf of the Virginia Labor Federation, is going to be our second guest. She's been on the show before. Interesting history. She started out with the CWA, Communication Workers of America, while working as a telephone operator with United Intermountain Telephone, which is now known as CenturyLink. Then she transitioned into work at AT&T Manufacturing. Then she joined the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, which is now known as Unite Here. Then she went back to the CWA as an international organizer. And then she moved up the ranks of the Virginia AFL-CIO. In 2006, Doris was elected Secretary-Treasurer, becoming the first woman to serve as an executive officer of the state federation. And then 4 years later, she became the first woman to be elected president of the Virginia AFL-CIO. She's heavily involved in politics. In fact, she was a member of the Democratic National Committee's Executive Council. And Virginia politics are kind of interesting because it was pretty much a red state for many, many years. Then it went blue. They had a Democratic governor, Democratic General Assembly, and that may change. That may change. We will talk about that. We'll talk about the PRO Act. Doris was among a group of union brothers and sisters back in July, knocking on the door of Senator Mark Warner's office in Norfolk. He's one of the holdouts on the PRO Act. And we've said this many, many times on the show. There's, I believe, Warner, Sinema, and Kelly. Now, Kelly is kind of moving toward voting on the PRO Act. But Warner, he's just not showing his cards right now. So we'll get into that and obviously talk about organizing and what's going to happen with the future politics in the state of Virginia. A Ravenna, Ohio aluminum parts manufacturer with a history of safety violations now faces $1,671,738 in penalties for 38 safety and health violations following an investigation into the death of a 43-year-old worker struck by a machine's barrier door this past March. It happened March 30th. The U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration alleges General Aluminum Manufacturing allowed employees to bypass guarding mechanisms designed to protect employees from the barrier door closing on them, and that a malfunction in the door's optic control existed prior to that deadly incident. Turns out the worker was loading a part into the machine when the barrier door closed on his head, killing him. In addition, OSHA's investigation identified problems with machine guarding and a lack of protective procedures, commonly known as lockout tagout, throughout the facility. OSHA claims that General Aluminum Manufacturing was aware of these problems and failed to do anything about them. The company also lacked effective process safety management procedures and failed to protect employees from burn and explosion hazards caused by pooled water on the floor. Jeez. They also failed to provide personnel with appropriate protective equipment, train workers adequately about hazards and safety procedures, and they lacked employee training and failed to develop emergency action plans. OSHA reports indicate the company has a history of serious injuries. I'm going to give you a couple examples. 11 amputated fingers, 2 fractured fingers, 2 punctured lungs, a fractured back, a fractured hand, a fractured foot, and third-degree burns. Wow. As a result, OSHA issued 4 repeat, 18 willful and serious safety and health violations and placed the company in the agency's severe violator enforcement program following the fatality inspection, and 2 others opened from employee complaints that inspectors received at the automotive casting plant. Jim Frederick is the acting assistant secretary of labor for OSHA. And this is what he said. General Aluminum's failure to learn from recent incidents and follow industry standards and their own company's policies created unnecessary and avoidable hazards at its facility. A worker lost his life because the company put the value of production speed over the safety of their employees. He went on to say that OSHA will continue to hold bad actors accountable and emphasize the importance of complying with safety and health requirements that can save lives. Unbelievable, huh? $1.6 million in fines. Now, they can answer this, obviously. There's a time period, and they can appeal it. But the bottom line is this. Marty Walsh, new guy at the Labor Department. Things are changing. I want to take this time to give you an opportunity because you might be working in unsafe conditions. Workers experiencing unsafe conditions can file a complaint by calling the OSHA hotline. Here's the number. It's 800-321-6740 or 321-OSHA. That's 800-321-6742. And investigations do not disclose who filed the complaint. That's right, because there's a lot of people see bad things happening and they're afraid to do anything about it. That number again is 800-321-6742. Now some good news. Ford says it will pump $11.4 billion into 3 battery plants, as well as an electric F-150 assembly plant. Ford said this will create 11,000 new jobs in Tennessee and Kentucky. The company also boosted its forecast for electric vehicle production and now expects that between 40 and 50% of its global vehicle volumes will be all electric by 2030. Previously said it was going to be about maybe close to 40%. Now they're pushing it closer to 50%. Ford's executive chair, Bill Ford, said this is a major moment where Ford will lead America's transition to electric vehicles and usher in a new era of clean, carbon-neutral manufacturing. With this investment and a spirit of innovation, we can achieve goals once thought mutually exclusive, and that is to protect our planet, build great electric vehicles Americans will love, and contribute to our nation's prosperity. Boy, I like the 11,000 new jobs. That sounds real good. All right, we have to break. When we come back, the Southeast Laborers Council.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. This guy was on, I'll say, about a year ago. David Rutledge is his name, and he comes to us from the Southeast Labor's Council, selabors.org. They're part of LIUNA, presenting sponsor of America's Workforce. And he comes out of Local 386 in Nashville, Tennessee. David Rutledge, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, brother?
Yes, sir. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good, good. We're hanging in there. Waiting for this infrastructure bill to pass in Washington. We'll touch on that in a moment. But a little background on the Southeast Labor's Council. What, seven states? And what does it go? Tennessee, south to, Louisiana, and then over to the east by South Carolina. Pretty good region there, right?
It's a pretty big area. It's a place that's not so fun to be in the summer, but it's a great area to represent.
And how many members in the Southeast Labor's Council right now?
I'd say somewhere around about 12,000.
Mm-hmm. Good. And Local 386 is one of about, what, a dozen? 13 unions, yep. Something like that?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Good, good. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Being the fact that it's in the South, there's a lot of right-to-work states there, probably all of them. How are we doing on organizing right now? Yeah, I know that's a difficult thing, but the pandemic, as you know, has changed everything. But how are we looking?
Sure, you know it's you're right about it being all right to work states in our area. Our state governments don't make it easy on us. But what you find is that there's a lot of local governments, including here in Nashville, but including New Orleans, Miami, Atlanta, Birmingham. A lot of these cities are trying to do interesting things and make it easier on working people than their state governments would prefer to allow. But as far as organizing goes, I don't think there's a single one of our locals down here that isn't just looking everywhere they can for workers. We've got about as much work as we have ever in the 10 years that I've been here. Every local is slammed right now for work. We're building a big expansion to the GM plant in Spring Hill here outside of Nashville with Local 386. We've got demolition work that's booming. We're building a nuclear plant down in Georgia. Just everywhere you turn, there's big work happening, and it's been a great opportunity for us. It's making us have to be a lot better at our job.
I'll bet it is. How is that affecting recruiting when it comes to like the apprenticeship programs and attracting young kids instead of going to college, maybe follow a career in the trades? How's that shaping up there?
Sure. It's sort of a mixed bag, I would say. I mean, on the one hand, I think we're experiencing the same thing that a lot of reporters are talking about, a lot of employers are talking about. Sometimes it's really hard to find people, and I think the pandemic had a really big effect on people's, sort of consideration of their work-life balance or whatever it is. And so, the good thing is we're offering good jobs. We're not Amazon. We're not, one of these sort of bottom of the barrel employers that's really just, trying to convince people to go work for them with a sign-in bonus and then treating them like garbage after they get in there. But, we are running, we've been active with a lot of our building trades councils in running these apprenticeship readiness programs that are sponsored by the National Building Trades. And it's been a great opportunity for us to get people who have no background in construction and, give them a chance to get started on a new career path. There was one gentleman, this was a couple years ago now, one gentleman here in Nashville who was an immigrant from Sudan. You know, he was a refugee. His family, he had two kids in high school, but had never had a better job than doing pizza delivery. And, you know, we were able to get him through that apprenticeship readiness program, and he came and joined the laborers and was doing demolition work at an old steam plant that we were tearing down here outside of Nashville, you know, making suddenly over probably about $25 an hour plus benefits, you know, and it just completely changed his life. And that's the kind of thing that's really an amazing experience to get to be a part of, you know.
And now he can eat all the pizza he wants, right?
Yeah, I suspect he probably doesn't want to, but if I drove around with pizza in my car all day, I'd get pretty sick of it. But
Yeah, I get it. But there's times that pizza sounds really good, you know.
That's right.
Especially on a Friday or a Saturday night with a couple of adult beverages. It goes down real good. But that's good, yep, to hear. That's really good to hear. I have to pick your brain a little bit. What are people saying about this infrastructure legislation that they're going back and forth with in Washington right now? I mean, this is a moment. And you know, Terry O'Sullivan has been the presenting sponsor of this show. What a great, mm-hmm, guy, just a super guy. And he said it, and we played the ad here at the top of the show. They said it in the commercial, this is a moment. This is our moment right now.
Yeah.
And with that being said, you know, when I feel eventually it's going to get done. Something's going to get done. It has to get done. But I'm just wondering what the people are saying. And then on the other side of this is going to create a lot more jobs. We're going to have to really ramp up those apprenticeship programs. So what's the story down there, David?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're exactly right. So, I mean, you know, this is the rare opportunity, you know, where our members, no matter who they might have supported for president, in the last couple elections or ever, you know, I think every single one of our members agrees that we need jobs, we want more jobs, and that infrastructure is the perfect thing for us, because that's what we do, right? We, you know, we call ourselves, we're the infrastructure union.
Right.
And so it's been a great opportunity for us to connect with our members across the Southeast and get them to talk to their congressman, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, and say, hey, we care about this. We want you to get this done. Like, stop beating around the bush. Stop playing games in D.C. Like, let's actually do something that actually affects the lives of ordinary working people. And so it's, like you said, it has been a good opportunity for us to reconnect with a lot of our membership and get them mobilized and activated, because that's what's going to make a difference, is, you know, the members of Congress hearing ordinary people reach out to them, not just lobbyists and you know, people with money, right? But ordinary folks saying, "Hey, do we care about this? Do something." So, mm-hmm, you know, I think we're ready to go. You know, we've been reinvesting in our training. We've been, you know, laying the groundwork with, you know, the like I said, sort of municipal governments that are going to get a lot of this infrastructure funding. You know, we've been laying the groundwork with them as far as developing policies to make sure that when they start spending that money, it's going to go in a, it's going to get spent in a way that's good for working people.
Yeah. That being said, David, you know, that legislation, and I'm talking about the bipartisan deal, the 1.2 or 1.3 trillion that got, mm-hmm, 19 Republicans to vote for it. That includes broadband. And, mm-hmm, from what I'm hearing, it's like $60 to $65 billion that would go to broadband. I can only imagine in your area. I mean, you're talking to us from Tennessee, but the states that you represent in the Southeast Labor's Council, that's got to be kind of sparse down there with broadband. What's the story there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can speak best about Tennessee. That's where I live. But, you know, there are parts of our state that still don't have adequate broadband access. And, you know, just like TVA back in the 30s was an opportunity to build physical infrastructure that was able to, you know, materially improve people's lives and also create thousands and thousands of jobs. You know, I think the same thing could be true of broadband. You know, it maybe is not the most intuitive thing, but, you know, internet infrastructure is probably as much of a necessity to succeeding in modern life as electricity was in the 30s and 40s. You know, if you're not connected, you're pretty much left out of the economy. And so, you know, the opportunity to help grow that infrastructure and do so in a way that's connecting millions of people with the modern world, but also creating thousands and thousands of jobs is something that we're incredibly excited about.
Jobs, 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 and good jobs at that. That's exactly what we want in this country. All right, I want to move on to Vanderbilt. Last time you and I were talking, there was some organizing going on there. What's the latest there, David?
Yeah, so, you know, we're actually just in the middle of contract negotiations now. You know, a year ago, a year and a half ago, the last time we spoke, we were preparing potentially for negotiations last fall. You know, the university had spent hundreds of millions of dollars to recruit a bunch of professors and, you know, had really hadn't moved the needle on wages for our members in several years. And unfortunately, that needle still hasn't moved very much. We extended the contract for a year, got a 2% increase. But, you know, our starting wages for folks, you know, we represent everything from dining and janitorial, groundskeeping, up to skilled crafts like plumbers and electricians in a unit of about 600 people. And the bottom end wage at the university in our unit is still $12.50 an hour, which is just unacceptable. You know, I think the universities recognize that they can't recruit or retain people with wages that low, but they're still, you know, just getting them to acknowledge that, you know, in a city where the cost of living is going up precipitously, where housing costs are going through the roof, it's like pulling teeth to get them to acknowledge that, you know, you just can't get away with $12.50 an hour. You know, even 15 is pushing it. You know, if you make $15 an hour, you know, you that's really not enough to live close to Vanderbilt, you know, much less, you know, in most of the denser parts of Nashville now. You know, there's people living in Section 8 housing who make $17 an hour. So, you know, Vanderbilt really needs to step up. And, you know, if it claims to be a world-class educational institution, it ought to treat its employees like they're part of that, you know.
I would imagine they have a pretty good endowment, too. I mean, a historic university, rich university, but they don't want to pay their workers. And this has been going on for how long now?
Well, so the last time we fully renegotiated the contract was 2017. So, you know, we're looking at 4 years without a real, you know, fundamental readjustment of the wage structure. And that's not the only thing that's the matter either, you know. You know, as just like there's been, they've had a hard time retaining people among the blue collar workforce. There's turnover with their managers too, and you know, some of them just act like, you know, they came from non-union shops. They came from, you know, Aramark or Cintas or some of these other big corporations, and you know, there's just a real morale issue. People aren't being treated with the respect they used to be at the university. You know, it used to not be unusual for there to be people with 45-year tenure working and dining, you know, and there's still a few of those folks out there. And, you know, I have tremendous amount of respect for everything that, you know, some of them were part of the original bargaining unit. But it's just a lot harder to see. You don't see that as much anymore because they're just increasingly not treated with the respect. And so, you know, I think especially through the pandemic, there were several of our real, you know, sort of old timers among the unit who are just like, well, this isn't worth it anymore. You know, I'm gone. And that's a tragedy because that's not just it's not just sad for them. It's sad for the students who benefit from having folks who love the place they work at and love the kids that they serve, you know. So we're trying to restore that.
Yeah. $12.50 an hour. That's where we are now. And where would you like to be? Do we have a number in mind?
I mean, you know, like I said, you know, parroting off of. You know, the great work that SEIU's done and other groups. I mean, I think 15 has got to be a bottom line.
Yeah.
But you know, I honestly, like I said, I'm not sure that's even sufficient. So you know, I think we'll be trying to get further than that if we can, and you know, we'll see what happens. But you know, the wages among our unit range from, you know, that very bottom number of $12.50 all the way up to north of $30 for some of our skilled folks. And honestly, you know, even their wages aren't keeping up with the market. A lot of them could go, you know, get work with, I mean, you know, electricians could go to IBEW and make more money, right, that we represent.
Right.
But they do have the benefit of having a stable job, right? Like they stay in one place. But, you know, if we want to keep up with the market, not just for the bottom wages, but for the top, then there's going to be have to be movement across the board.
I hear you. Even Amazon announced that they're raising wages between $17 and $18 an hour. So, yeah, they're way behind there. Way, way, way behind. All right, David, anything else that you want to call attention to while I have you on the line?
I don't think so. If you happen to be listening to this and you're interested in going to work at General Motors in Spring Hill, Tennessee, then give us a call. We need people. So.
Okay. Well, let me give the website out. It's selabors.org. Twitter handle is @LiunaSoutheast, @LiunaSoutheast. And we're talking Local 386 based in Nashville, Tennessee. All right, my brother, you take care. Great conversation. Stay safe, and let's do this again soon, okay?
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right, David Rutledge, Liuna Local 386. All right, we're going to break. Doris Krause-Mays, president of the Virginia AFL-CIO. She's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes Liuna to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora when you get an opportunity. Just take a minute, sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and we appreciate our rating, a good rating. 5 stars, greatly appreciated. All right, let's go to line number 2. Been a while since we had this lady on the show. Doris Krause-Mays is her name. Longtime involved in unions, and she is currently, for the past, 11 years now, head of the Virginia AFL-CIO. va-aflcio.org is their website. Doris Krause-Mays, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
We're doing just fine.
Good, good, good.
Everything is going well for you and your listeners.
Yeah, we're doing well. The podcast has really extended our reach, and I'll tell you, a lot of people, I get texts all the time. Thank you for doing a show about organized labor. I love it. I love it. It's so badly needed, and we're seeing a lot of organizing going on. And I'll tell you, I saw your name on the AFL-CIO news feed, and this was in July. There was a rally outside Senator Mark Warner's office in Norfolk, Virginia. And this all had to do with the PRO Act, and I guess he's still a holdout on this. Well, talk to me about that rally. I would imagine you were part of the group that put this together, and I imagine also it probably happened more than once. Doris, what's the story here?
Well, it's definitely occurred more than once. Norfolk was just one of the locations. We have been doing rallies and events at all of his, pretty much all of his regional offices within the state, outside his office, even set up meetings where workers and union activist can go in and talk to his staff about why the PRO Act is such an important piece of legislation, and trying to encourage him to sign on as a co-sponsor. But the energy is high for our union members here in Virginia, because everybody feels that all workers should have the right to have a union and the right to organize in an atmosphere that's free of intimidation and, you know, pressure. So,
what's his problem? Why won't he sign on?
So there's like two areas that is of concern to him. One of the areas happens to be, which it's not even in the bill, and that is workers, when they go from one job to the next, he thinks they should have portability of the benefits and stuff. And while we agree and, you know, hopefully we can help workers that are able to, you know, have their benefits go from one job to the next, until then, the only way to do that is to make sure that they have a union. And then a discussion around independent contractors and gig workers. So those are the two areas that he has the most concern with. But we have had a lot of movement with him. We have put workers in front of the senator so that he can hear from workers instead of just, you know, myself or others as labor leaders. We really need to have workers tell their story. And it takes courage to do that. And I am so proud of the workers here in Virginia that have went before him and his staff telling the story as to why they would like and need to have a union. And we've included gig workers in that as well.
Okay, Doris, it just sounds to me that we just have to keep the pressure on him. Let me ask you this. Right now, Congress is looking over the infrastructure bill. That's the bipartisan bill. And, you know, they want to tie that in. The Democrats want to tie that in with reconciliation, which is $3.5 trillion. And I know that's a tough sell, especially we got Joe Manchin out there. Where's Warner on that one? Do we have an indication on how he stands?
Well, I do know that he has been very proactive in the reconciliation and everything. So I feel confident on that issue that he'll be more proactive in that arena.
And it's my understanding, Doris, that a lot of pro is written into that reconciliation bill, especially when it comes to companies that that violate labor law. There could be some fines as high as $100,000. So it might be a backdoor approach to get at least some of pro passed in this Congress. So we'll see what happens. But it sounds like you've been very, very active. You know, while we're talking about politics in Virginia, I know you had a change over the last couple of years. It was primarily a red state. Now you have a Democratic governor, Democratic General Assembly. But, you know, Republicans aren't standing idle. You know that.
No, they're not.
They want the power back. There's no question. Where do we stand right now? Because isn't Terry McAuliffe, who's a former governor, he's trying to get back in there?
Yes, he is. He's running again. But in addition to the governor's race, you know, we have our House of Delegates that's up for grabs as well. And, you know, we have 55 Democrats in the House of Delegates, and we've got to maintain at least that 55, and hopefully we're able to gain another seat or two, because some people may not realize that in Virginia, when it comes to determining how many of each individual party sits on a committee, it is proportional. So if we go down to 54 Democrats in the House of Delegates, we will lose one Democrat off of every single committee. And, you know, we all know that sometimes bills either die or get passed out in committee. And if you can't get it out of committee, you're surely not going to be able to get it to the floor, hardly. So that's, you know, really key for us, especially in labor. For our Labor and Commerce Committee in the House of Delegates, we have our own union member, Jawan Ward, as chair, and she is president of the Hampton Federation of Teachers. Our other union member in the House of Delegates is Elizabeth Guzman from Ask Me, who also sits on Labor and Commerce. So, you know, we've got to maintain that because we're just not going to be we just can't lose those two union members off that committee, and we got to maintain that chair. The other thing, too, is the lieutenant governor's race in Virginia, who oversees the Senate, which our Senate is 21-19, 21 Democrats and 19 Republicans. And while we may have the majority in numbers, there are times that the 21 Democrats may not be quite as unified as you would like. So therefore, the lieutenant governor has had to break ties, and we've just got to make sure that the lieutenant governor is going to be a pro-union, pro-worker over the Senate. Because in the last 4 years, the current lieutenant governor broke 52 ties. And that is a lot of ties.
Yeah.
So we've just got to make sure that we maintain that as well.
It sounds to me what's happening in Virginia is very similar to what's happening in Washington right now, where the Democrats are not unified on certain issues. And I just mentioned the reconciliation package. So, it seems like it's a microcosm of what's going on in America right now. Doris, I got to take a quick break. You can stay with us for another segment. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine. Thank you.
Doris Krause-Mays joining us on our live line. She is the president of the Virginia State Labor Federation. This is something we started months ago. And the whole idea here is to kind of get a feeling of what's going on labor-wise in various parts of the country. And today, we're focusing on Virginia. We'll continue our conversation right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That's AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Doris Krause-Mays. Doris is president of the Virginia State Labor Federation, va-afl-cio.org, va-afl-cio.org. Doris, you wanted to talk about this Oxfam report. Apparently, this report came out recently stating that your state, Virginia, was number one in business, but they needed to do some catch-up when it comes to being the number one state for workers. What's the story here, Doris?
Yeah, so every year Oxfam, does these studies and reports. So a year ago, when Oxfam report came out, we were number one for business, but we were 51 for workers. So that's just unacceptable to be 51 for workers. I mean, like on the bottom. For goodness sake. But with our General Assembly session 2020 and 2021, we were able to make significant gains for workers here in the state of Virginia. And so just recently, Oxfam came out with their report, and we have moved up to 23 for workers, from 51 to 23 for workers. Still number one for business, and I have always tried to get legislators to understand while you're number one for business, you need to be number one for workers, because it is the workers that move and make businesses work. Right. So we can do both. And I think this just proves that when you do progressive things and pass things for workers, you will move up to be number one for business and number one for workers. And this proves that. We still got more to go. I'm not going to settle for 23. I want us to get to 21. I mean, one for business one for workers. Sorry about that.
There you go. There you go. Okay, you went from 51 to 23. What was the major catalyst in that? I'm sure there were several things, but perhaps in this last year, what would you say pushed it to the level that it is now?
So I would say there's several things, not just exactly like one thing. But one of the areas was we were able to do collective bargaining for local public employees. While it's optional and we still have an opportunity here to, strengthen that, we haven't had collective bargaining for public employees in over 44 years. The minimum wage, been working on the minimum wage and have made increases in that. We were able to repeal the prohibition on project labor agreements. We made some changes and some improvements in workers' compensation. We've done the Virginia Values Act, so that helped a lot. And also combating wage theft and fraud and worker misclassification. The vote by mail. And everything like that, the paid sick days, while we only have it for 30,000 home health care workers, we have an opportunity here to go further with that. So those are just some of the few things that we've been able to do that's protected workers. And even the Oxfam report talks about that. They talk about the Virginia Values Act, and also the Pregnancy Worker Fairness Act. So these are all things that have really helped to improve that.
That's interesting. I was not aware that Oxfam did a state-by-state analysis. I know they've done stuff on what's happening with regard to poverty globally and various nations. But that's interesting. So congratulations. And I could see why
you're
president.
Well, thank you. I got to get to number one for workers, though.
But I wanted to say that's why you're getting the big bucks over there, heading the State Labor Federation in Virginia. Obviously, you know, your efforts are paying off big time. So congratulations. All right. I got one question here. I know when the political dynamics change in Virginia, there was some talk, and you and I talked about this the last time you were on, about getting rid of right to work. And to my knowledge, I think it goes back, 70 plus years? And Virginia was one of the first states. Yeah, that went right to work. Where are we with that right now?
So during our interview process for candidates, we talked to them about right to work and why that needs to be repealed. One of the other things that we do is we do candidate workshop training. So when after the primaries are over and you know who the nominees are, you know, from each party, we put together like a 3-hour training session where we talk about issues that are important to workers, and the repeal of right to work is one of those. So we educate legislators on why this needs to be changed. So I think that has helped a lot, because in the past 4 years, we've closed the gap in terms of even the general public who thinks it should be repealed and those that don't. So we still have some work to do on the education process. We're not going to stop, but people that run for office really like this training session. They're able to really learn about it. But we're going to keep on, and we are going to repeal right to work in this state. But that's where we're at now.
Well, I like to hear that, Doris. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of politicians that are scratching their heads on right to work. Jim Justice in neighboring West Virginia. I don't know if you heard him. This was months ago. He said, hey, we got rid of prevailing wage. We passed right to work, and none of the jobs came that they promised. What's going on here? So,
I guess he found out the field of dreams really didn't work.
No.
You can't build a ball field and think everybody's going to come.
Well, I tell you, it sounds like a lot of good things are happening in the state of Virginia. You got your hands full over there. And I tell you, you got 2 union members in the General Assembly, which is good. I'm just wondering, I know some states, I think it's New Jersey, that has a very aggressive program. Are you ramping that up too, so you make sure you get more union brothers and sisters in office?
I'll give kudos to New Jersey, because Virginia and New Jersey were 2 states that have elections every year and everything. But at every avenue we can, you know, we try to encourage union members to run for office. One thing in Virginia, though, that makes it a very challenging for union members is it's not a full-time legislation. And a worker, it's very hard for workers to be out of work for like either 30 or 45 or 60 days, you know, at a time. And this past year, you know, not only were they in session for 45 days, but we also had special sessions. So it's very hard for, you know, working families to take the time off from their jobs on this. So, because the pay's, you know, the pay's not very much either.
I hear you.
But we do try to encourage union members to run for office. And if we're willing to train them and work with them as well in order to run for office, because that's the only way that we're really, really going to make the changes and maintain them, is if we have union members that are in office.
I hear you. All right, Doris, we're going to leave it on that note. Doris Krause-Mays, president of the Virginia Labor Federation, va-afl-cio.org. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to let you get your state up to number one for workers, okay?
Yes, thank you so much, and have a good afternoon.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the Massachusetts Nurses and the Metal Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.